time for the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Coming up in the show here today, I'll have national and regional agricultural news headlines, and Taylor Charlstrom will be in with a report talking about the upcoming pistachio irrigation workshop in Tulare. The show kicks off with regional agricultural news headlines right after this.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture is encouraging summer school meal programs to get to know your local farms during Farm to Summer Week, which is this week. The Teach, Taste, and Connect elements of Farm to Summer Week include celebrating local foods on the summer menu, offering a taste test in student meals, and providing opportunities for children to experience agricultural-based education activities. California Department of Education ideas for celebrating Farm to Summer Week include providing an agriculture or nutrition education lesson, watching a virtual farm tour or an activity led by community partners such as a farmer, master gardener, parent volunteer, or local health department staff. Summer school meal programs receiving U.S. Department of Agriculture funding are further encouraged to participate in Farm to Summer Celebration Week. The theme for Farm to Summer Week of 2022 is Get to Know Your Local Farms. The increasing volatile and extreme weather has been affecting farm workers' health. After working in high temperatures outdoors, people often feel exhausted and have regular stomach aches and dizziness. These are common symptoms of heat stress, which also include dehydration, nausea, and heat stroke, the leading cause of worker-related death in farm workers. Statistics from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention showed that 815 workers died from heat exposure between 1992 and 2017. For farm workers, heat can negatively impact their cognitive performance and behavior and threaten their overall well-being. Many agricultural workers also experience respiratory issues caused by exposure to pesticides, dust, and fungi. A paper published in the Environmental Research Letters revealed that global number of agricultural workers has decreased due to rising temperatures. Heat stress among farm workers is becoming more prevalent as temperatures continue to rise, according to Alexis Guild, the Director of Health Policy and Programs at Farm Worker Justice, an organization created to protect agricultural workers' rights. Only Washington, California, and Oregon have implemented safety heat and wildfire protections for agricultural workers. Employers in these states are lawfully required to check their air quality index and provide respirators and training about hazards of wildfire smoke. Farm Worker Justice aims to expand heat and wildfire smoke legislation standards to other states, in addition to appealing to Congress for improved protections for farm workers. And according to United Farm Workers, 73% of all farm workers are immigrants and up to 36% are undocumented, making them more likely not to have access to health care if they get sick on a job. The estimated number of unsafe working days will increase twofold in three decades. In states like Florida that already suffer extreme heat and humidity, it will be even more dangerous to work outdoors. Farm workers have lost 10 to 90 times the number of work hours compared to their peers in clerical services and manufacturing work. This loss will decrease the amount of available produce across the nation. As summer approaches and heat waves make their way across the country, environmental researchers have proposed a list of possible solutions to keep farm workers safe. These solutions include changing work shifts to cooler hours, providing farm workers with more rest breaks and water, and training people on how to cope with the heat stress. However, these issues may not be within reach for agricultural workers who do not have access to health care, cannot take breaks, and do not have a choice to pick their days or hours of work. California vintner Bill Foley is bolstering his company's presence in Napa Valley with a deal to purchase Silverado Vineyards from the Disney Miller family, according to Wine Spectator. The purchase price is estimated to be over $150 million. Founded by Ron Miller and his wife, Diane Disney Miller, Silverado last year marked its 40th anniversary. Silverado's current annual production is about 68,000 cases, sold primarily through the wholesale market, but it holds a permit to make up to 140,000 cases. Its offerings range from Miller Ranch Sauvignon Blanc at around $25 a bottle up through single vineyard Cabernet Sauvignon expressions like Gio and Solo, the latter selling around $125. It's a dichotomy of two markets, according to Mike Azdorian of Fresno, California-based DLG Produce, about the current supplies of grapes available, given grapes are coming in currently from both Coachella, California, and Mexico. Azdorian says that Coachella has become a bit more of a niche growing region as it factors in valued land, cost of labor in California, water shortage, and more. So there are still some growers in Coachella growing pretty good crops, but it's in fewer hands, he says. They seem to be seeing good demand on the smaller crop volume they have there. He notes that much of the fruit is destined for retailers promoting USA-grown product, and the region also has the support of USDA programs and contracts. That's beneficial to them, and it also brings down the total crop volume out there on the available market. Coachella has approximately 2 to 3 more weeks of production and then should have a relatively seamless transition to the Central California growing region, though some overlap is likely. Some of the carryover product will be some later organic varieties as well. Mexico is transitioning growing regions. They're seeing pretty large volume of flame seedless grapes, either from earlier regions still on inventory or new crop. And he adds that DLJ Produce itself is packing its premium Razzle Dazzle brand out of Mexico, which will transition to Central California once quality specifications are met. He says the red grape market is a little depressed out of Mexico, and there's also concern about overall condition and size of grapes. Stone Fruit supplies are strong right now and heading into the heart of the season out of California. At Prima Wawona in Fresno, it's finishing up apricots in less than 10 days, but is continuing with production on yellow-fleshed and white-fleshed peaches and nectarines and plums. There are similar volumes to last year's in industry, according to Mauricio Jimenez-Castro, director of sales for Prima. He says they are between 7 to 10 days ahead of last year, which is more in line with where the normal timing should be. Prima has a longer season, which begins the last week of April, and it has fruit available until the last week of October. They have a lot of late yellow peach varieties that come into production in September and October, so it's fresh fruit and not storage fruit, according to Jimenez Castro. Sizing also seems to be developing. The season started off with fruit approximately one size down from where the grower would normally like to see it, but the sizing is improving as they get into the mid-season varieties. They're now in line where historically trends normally are, and he says that sugar levels and flavor are also at optimum levels right now.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit Phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
On July 7th in Tulare, California, pistachio growers and consultants will have the opportunity to join nut advisors, irrigation specialists, and other UC researchers at a water management workshop for pistachios at the International Agri Center. During the workshop, attendees will be able to learn about the latest research and advances in pistachio water management and irrigation.
We've got the meeting broken out sort of into different themes, and we're going to be talking about some of the basic principles and information behind irrigation management. There's a lot of complex infrastructure for water supply, and we're going to have an expert, Mike Wade, from the California Farm Water Coalition there to kind of give us an outlook on what the water supply looks like right now, given the extreme shortage of water. We'll also be kind of giving some overview to help people understand what the physiological and phenological responses are of pistachio to water stress. We want to give some perspective on irrigation scheduling and nutrition management and how that might change during times of low water availability. We want to introduce people to some new technologies. This might be a lot of things that people are already familiar with, but new developments in remote sensing and then irrigation system automation and available web applications that they can use to increase their irrigation scheduling precision and improve their water use efficiency. Daniele Zaccaria will provide an update on his continued research on ET in pistachio and talk about how he's found that, you know, a lot of the KC values, they can differ substantially across different growing regions with respect to different soil types and salinity. Finally, again, with those remote sensing tools, try to give the attendees an understanding of how not only are these can be used commercially for the grower, but then also how it's being used for compliance with the SGMA.
The workshop was developed due to rising demand for irrigation information related to pistachios, not only in the San Joaquin Valley, but also in the Sacramento Valley.
Get a lot of questions about what, you know, like how should we manage things differently with the way the water outlook is right now. So we're hoping that they come away with a positive outlook on, you know, I'm feeling like they have the knowledge and the tools how to manage pistachios most effectively to help trees survive during difficult water years and to create conditions that facilitate a quick return to normal production when water supplies improve. Water scarcity is becoming an increasing issue across the state. And so I think, you know, a lot of the same information is going to be applicable, you know, like how can we, you know, tailor our irrigation systems and scheduling to make the most efficient use of the water supplies that we have. So although it's going to be kind of tailored to the San Joaquin Valley, I think, you know, in terms of management, there's more overlap than differences. So, down here, we tend to have more problems with salinity in the soil, but that also is an increasing issue in the north as well. So, I don't think it would be a waste of time, you know, just because it's kind of more geared to the southern San Joaquin Valley or the San Joaquin Valley.
In addition to talks from multiple UC personnel, a set of irrigation related methods, technologies, and products to help growers schedule and manage irrigation will also be presented during the workshop.
We are going to have a number of vendors there putting on demos, you know, showing you what different technologies are available so you can enjoy that. The Agri Center, International Agri Center in Tulare is located right along Highway 99. So, you know, it's really close to all the amenities that you would need. We hope that you will come join us. And we have a number of continuing education credits. We have six credits approved. And I'm sorry, I don't have the categories in front of me right now, but I can relay that information back to you. But, you know, if you need your continuing education credits, some of those as well.
Registration for the event includes participation to the morning and afternoon sessions, coffee breaks, a lunch meal, and access to the workshop presentations. The fee is $60, and a link to register is in the description for today's show below. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Unsure of your naval orange worm program? No worries now with Rango, a proven solution to protect your orchard at hull split from naval orange worm. Rango is an OMRI-listed broad-spectrum biopesticide with no known resistance, making it an excellent rotation and tank mix partner for both conventional and organic growers. Partner with Rango today. Contact your PCA, local dealer, or visit rangonow.com. Rango, no worries now.
President Joe Biden has called on Congress and states to provide direct relief to consumers facing increased gas and diesel prices. The price of gas is up dramatically around the world and by almost $2 per gallon in America. The White House says since Putin began amassing troops on the border of Ukraine, the federal government charges an 18-cent tax per gallon of gasoline and a 24-cent per gallon tax on diesel. Those taxes fund highway and public transportation through the Highway Trust Fund. But with gas prices near $5 a gallon on average across the country, President Biden is calling on Congress to suspend the gas tax for 3 months until the end of September to give Americans a little extra breathing room as they deal with the effects of Putin's war in Ukraine. The president is also calling on Congress to ensure that a gas tax holiday has no negative effect on the Highway Trust Fund. And a Clean Fuels Alliance has touted the benefits of biodiesel when it comes to price at the pump to President Joe Biden and leaders in Congress. In a letter to the president and lawmakers, the organization says U.S. biodiesel and renewable diesel producers are working to extend fuel supplies and provide relief at the pump to American families. The letter expresses appreciation for the administration's recent actions to grow renewable fuel standard volumes for advanced biofuels and biomass-based diesel and provide additional infrastructure grants to improve consumer access to biodiesel. The letter states that their partners in the agriculture industry are investing more than $4 billion to expand the supply of renewable oils for both food and clean fuels. The letter further highlights a recent study from the World Agricultural, Economic, and Environmental Service showing that U.S. biodiesel and renewable diesel production generates a 4% decrease in the price of diesel fuel. Nominations are now being accepted for USDA Farm Service Agency county committees, as well as newly formed urban agriculture committees, as part of an annual election process. USDA Ag News reporter Rod Bain has more information.
Local USDA Farm Service Agency service areas now are accepting nominations for FSA county committee members.
We have an election every year. It consists of a nomination period. The nomination period runs August 1st.
FSA Deputy Administrator Marcus Graham says ag producers who utilize USDA programs and reside in a local service area are eligible to run as county committee members, either nominating themselves or another candidate.
Our ballots are mailed to the eligible voters on November 7th.
With ballots submitted by December 1st. New county committee members are sworn into office on January 1st to serve a three-year term. Terms are staggered, so one-third of all county committee seats are up for election in any given year. The deputy administrator says duties of county committee members include:
they look at producers' appeals. They also look at commodity price support. They look at conservation programs. They hire county executive directors. They share information opportunities for their communities.
Details on the FSA County Committee election process are available online at www.fsa.usda.gov/elections. This year's election process will also be historical, as it is the first elections for recently established urban ag committees.
The whole idea behind the urban ag committees and urban ag in general is to ensure that we have our urban producers participating in our programs and services.
Deputy Administrator Graham adds urban ag committee members will also provide outreach and assist in implementation of USDA programs in their service area. 11 recently established urban and suburban ag committees will undergo their election process this year. Meanwhile, 6 recently announced committees serving Chicago, Detroit, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Los Angeles, Brooklyn, and Oakland will hold elections at a later date. More details about FSA urban ag committees can be found online at www.farmers.gov/urban. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Last week, Republican leaders from the Agriculture and Budget Committees introduced the Reducing Farm Input Costs and Barriers to Production Act. Dan Newhouse, chair of the Western Caucus, says the legislation will protect and promote American agriculture by reversing the Biden administration's regulatory barriers to domestic production while providing immediate relief to farmers and families across the country. Newhouse says he and his fellow lawmakers have a deep appreciation for all farmers do, but that feeling is not universal in Washington, D.C.
But lately, the president, along with his far-left Democrats, are so focused on radically altering the country with their burdensome regulations and their socialist spending approach that they're blind to the impacts that their own policies are having on Americans across the country.
Newhouse says with the cost of living at a 40-year high and still moving up, now is not the time to raise taxes on the ag community. He says lawmakers can help farmers by addressing the ongoing labor shortage, which he said will help to keep the food supply chain strong.
First, the House has acted twice now, to pass my legislation, the Farm Workforce Modernization Act. And it's time that the Senate act on it as well to provide labor for our farmers, which they so desperately need.
That's Representative Dan Newhouse, a Washington State Republican.
Spotted lanternfly is an invasive species that is native to China. The pest was first detected in the U.S. in 2014 and has since been found in 11 states. Spotted lanternfly feeds on a wide variety of fruit, ornamental, and woody trees. Chris Jones is a research scholar at the Center of Geospatial Analytics at North Carolina State University. Jones and his team conducted a study to predict the timing of the spread of spotted lanternfly across the U.S. Their research found that this pest may reach California by 2033 if mitigation strategies are not put into place.
Spotted lanternfly was first introduced to the United States in Berks County, Pennsylvania, and it was first discovered in 2014. And since has spread to 11 states as of the most recent data that is out. And the danger to crops is that it feeds directly on the crops and causes reduced plant vigor or just plant health. So you can think about your crops being less healthy because it feeds on them, and it leaves behind honeydew, which causes sooty mold, which can cause a reduction in like the viable crops because of this sooty mold that's on it that causes it to not be commercially viable. The concern with and the focus of our study on California is that the majority of the grapes in the U.S. are grown in California, and that's the commodity that seems to be the most impacted by spotted lanternfly. So vines are more susceptible, receive more damage, or at least that's been the case in Pennsylvania thus far and other states, is that we've lost more grape production than anything else. So it getting to California would be a big deal just because you have your high dollar wine grapes plus the pure amount of grapes that were grown in California.
Jones tells us more about this study and the methods that were used to collect data.
Yeah, so we used machine learning to calibrate our model based on observation data collected by state departments of ag and the USDA APHIS on spotted lanternfly observations. And we calibrated the model from 2014 to 2019 using a machine learning method called approximate Bayesian computation. I won't go into the details of that, but it simply looks at fitting the model, the simulated data to the model data and comparing accuracy metrics for best fit to those parameters. And then we validated that model on the 2020 and 2021 spotted lanternfly data, so data outside of our calibration points, to determine how well our model performed. So the model simulates reproduction, dispersal, and establishment of spotted lanternfly using environmental variables as well as the rail network, so looking at rail corridors at which spotted lanternfly can spread, which we found to be a highly predictive path by which spotted lanternfly long distance dispersal occurs. So using these layers of environmental and rail data, we're able to predict where it's going to disperse to based on the historic data. So we have our map for 2022, and we'll compare and iteratively redo the model next year as well. So each time we get a new data.
This study can be used to help develop mitigation strategies to help stop the spread of spotted lanternfly. In addition, the model used in the study may also be able to be used for other pests and pathogens as well.
So that's part of what we were hoping to do with this study, is to identify points at which the spotted lanternfly is likely to reach, establish, and then kind of spread farther. So like these nodes of like long distance network dispersal, so we can kind of like provide an early alert for where surveys and mitigation efforts could take place. And while we didn't particularly propose any mitigation efforts in our study, we simply ran the model without any mitigation efforts at all, which isn't the case of what's going on. So you can think about this as like the worst case scenario. What states and the USDA is trying to do is slow the spread. So they're trying to target these areas where it's likely to lead to future long distance spread and wipe out like new long distance established populations. So this is populations that are disconnected by a large distance from the current kind of like large source population in Pennsylvania. And some methods to do that are removing Tree of Heaven ahead of time, which is shown to be required to complete spotted lantern fly's life cycle. So if you can remove Tree of Heaven and Black Walnut, although they are not looking to remove Black Walnut because the fecundity or the ability of spotted lantern fly to have viable egg masses on Black Walnut's about 1/7. So you get 1/7 less spotted lantern fly hatch per individual if they fed on Black Walnut versus Tree of Heaven. But those are the only two hosts that they seem to require to have viable offspring. And the goal of the model was to actually be useful for multiple pests and pathogens. And we've used it for spotted lantern fly so far. We've used it for sudden oak death in Oregon. We've used it for porcine epidemic head V and pork production in North Carolina. And then we've been using it for a couple other pests that we are still calibrating and validating the model on. So we're hoping that it will be useful for multiple pests across multiple different agricultural and forestry applications.
Producers in California can help slow the spread of this pest by reporting it to the California Department of Agriculture if it is seen in your area.
In terms of reporting, the California Department of Agriculture has a number and a website which, if you see spotted lantern fly in your area, in which to report it to them so they can keep track of it and set up future surveys to see if the population has established in like a larger area outside of where you've seen it.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.